reorganizing the global consumer. We started a process in the 1990s with a series of trade agreements that accelerated the reorganization of the global labor markets, and that was part of facilitating what I refer to as engineering of the financial coup d'etat. You know, if you as a subscriber, Salary Report subscriber, have not watched the wonderful video of Sir James Goldsmith talking about this as a fundamental shift in the relationship between capital and labor, we put it up once again in the comic book. And it's a marvelous description, even though it was filmed in 1994, of exactly what's going on in the economy today. But that was an unleashing of a reengineering of the labor market and the relationship between labor and capital. What we're seeing now is possibly even more dramatic. In 2013, manufacturers shipped over 1 billion smartphones. And what is happening is that the mantle of the largest consumer market, which for many decades was the United States, now at about approximately 317 million, which had moved to the European Union when the European Union was created, a market of 503 million people, approximately now, has now shifted to something called people who are online. Almost 2 billion people now online, connected with devices that are increasingly very unique. Smartphones are an integration of media, entertainment, financial transactions, and I should say it's also tablets. So we have almost 2 billion people online, and they control a significant majority of the media attention and the financial transactions on the planet. Not to say that we can't get the other 6 billion, 7 billion plus online as well and start to bring them into the media attention and financial transactions of the first 2 billion. So this process, as we reorganized the labor markets in the 90s and still continuing, now we've started to reorganize the consumer markets in ways that it is increasingly hard to fathom. So let's turn to the first part, mobile ready. What does it mean when media and entertainment and financial transactions can be merged into one medium, particularly if that medium can involve subliminal programming and entrainment and all sorts of other things? If you haven't listened to the Salary Report on entrainment, you must do it, particularly given the direction that things are going. The other thing is, even though I call this mobile ready, if you look at what is happening with the chipping and the digitizing of everything and the connection through the internet, what's called the Internet of Things, we're talking about something that's much bigger than just smartphones. We're talking about literally digitizing and setting up just about everything to communicate, given the invasiveness of the different systems, whether it's government or private entities or just, you know, hackers listening in. There's serious questions about what is this going to be like if everybody and everything is connected in these ways. One of the big questions coming out of this is will the Snowden revelations create a balkanized internet? We're seeing groups around the world start to question the safety of these different systems and try and figure out a way to create something regionally. A very interesting development. We'll see how it evolves. There are tremendous implications for the equity markets, as we talked about in the annual wrap-up, with literally, I described it as two models, Global 2.0 and 3.0. Global 3.0 is the models that work well in a networked world. 2.0 is the industrial model, and we're watching a shift. And many, many companies are making that shift successfully. Many others are not. And this shift is important. So it's going to have tremendous impact on the financial markets. And it's one of the reasons I have said for quite a while, you've heard me both in the wrap-up and in Money and Markets talk about the divergence within the market. I put up in the comic book a comparison of four stocks just to give you a sense of the magnitude of what's going on. One was the gold ETF. One is an index for the S&P 500. One is Lockheed Martin, the largest defense contractor and the largest government contractor. So this is, if any company runs day-to-day the nuts and bolts of the U.S. government, it's Lockheed Martin. And then the social media ETF, which is a lot of the different companies involved in building the sort of the social media and doing a lot of what the mobile advertising and mobile payment action is developing. And what you can see is the social media and defense contractor have performed way ahead over the last year of S&P. And social media has been falling, and with the Ukraine and other things around the world, Lockheed has continued on up. It's very interesting, but both of them moving very ahead of the market index. I also put up an information in a chart on Freescale Semiconductor. This spring, Freescale was nominated one of the 50 most innovative companies in 2014 by MIT Technology Review. One of the achievements of Freescale highlighted in the report is that they make tiny computers for the Internet of Things. One of the things they noted was 2 square millimeter size of a Freescale chip that has a processor, memory, and other functions. So they're noted for the tiny chips and the creating capacity for the Internet of Things. On March 3rd, Freescale Semiconductor released its first 11 radio frequency power products suitable for U.S.-based defense market application. On March 8, 2014, 20 employees of Freescale Semiconductor on their way to China disappeared with Malaysia Flight 370. We've seen questions all over the internet. One of the subscribers asked, "Do I think there's a connection?" We don't know. The reason I highlighted this is it's perfectly possible. If you look at the importance of this kind of intellectual capital and related patents, you're going to see this kind of squabbling over who gets the knowledge and who has control of it. So could it be possible that the disappearance of Malaysia 370 related to the fact that there were 20 Freescale Semiconductors on the plane? You betcha. That doesn't make it so, but that's the kind of economic warfare we need to be watching for. Retail 2.0 to 3.0, second category within this reorganizing the global consumer. If you look at what's happening within the retail area, it's unbelievably dynamic. I put up a commentary called Bits and Atoms in the first quarter. And I should say, we've listed at the bottom of the comic book all of the top commentaries as well as the reports we did in the first quarter, so you have just those as wonderful resources right there. But what I talked about was the extent to which goods and services are now going to be purchased online and delivered, you know, whether it's by Amazon's drones or by the post office, or whether we're going to keep going down to the shopping malls. Throughout the country, what you see as you drive around is more and more large warehouses and transportation facilities are popping up at the edge of the cities. And what's happening is that we're seeing the malls begin to empty out. And so you're seeing literally this shift from the shopping mall into the warehouse, which is in fact delivering the online purchases. But lots of other creative issues of, do people use their mobile phone to test and price things out as they're wandering through the store? So it's not a matter of bits or atoms. It's very dynamic ways of sort of reorganizing both of them. As part of this, the numbers are quite astronomical, and it gets back to this number of people online. We see last year just the app store at Apple, not the whole store, not the full Apple store, just the app store, sold $10 billion of sales in apps. In December, their app sales were $1 billion. That's equivalent to the annual revenues of the government of Greenland. So we have literally the Apple store, the app store at the Apple store surpassing numerous number of governments in size. It's quite astonishing. I put up a stock chart of a couple of sort of the retail 2.0 companies and 3.0, and it's very interesting. You see literally from the beginning of the century, so I show from about 2003, you look at Sears, Macy's, JCPenney, their stocks are essentially flat, whereas I added Vipshop and Apple, who are skyrocketing beyond them, Vipshop being one of the online stores in China. And you literally see, again, this tremendous divergence between 2.0 and 3.0. Now, what does it mean to you and me? There are lots of changes. One is, much of this is going to be re-engineering costs in a variety of different areas down. So if you look at what it cost me once upon a time to have, you know, 11,000 CDs or songs, which is the number of songs I have in my iPad, and buy them all in physical form as opposed to download them and put them on the iPod, big savings. So one of the things you want to look at in anything that can be done digitally is how can you re-engineer your expenses down? And also identify the market opportunities. There are tremendous number of opportunities for small business and entrepreneurs, but it, as I keep saying, it means we have to keep on learning. So this is the shift from retail 2.0 to 3.0 is good news for some people, bad news for others. It can be good news for consumers if they're paying attention and spending the time. A couple of items about who's fading away. TV continues to hold its numbers, but if you look at what it's drawing and how it's working, clearly a deterioration in many areas, although we have some pretty interesting content, especially for internet TV. Cable is clearly dying, as far as I can tell, and Hollywood is struggling to maintain control and keeps running to Washington to try and sort of rig their way back into the game. But and no doubt this is going to be tough on the physical theater. So watch the recreation of Bits and Atoms around the consumers. It's going to be very interesting. And again, it's going to be global. And with more of the sales coming from Asia than coming from North America or the EU. Okay, next section within this global consumer reorganization, consumers just do it. One of the things we're seeing, as more and more consumers get online, find each other, talk to each other, they're getting more and more fed up with the traditional systems. They're getting fed up with 2.0, but they're getting fed up with being lied to by media and government. And I put up some wonderful examples of this. There are walkaways and workarounds happening everywhere. You see a wonderful movie that I watched in the first quarter at Dallas Buyers Club about a group of citizens in Dallas who have AIDS and just have it with the traditional medical system and go to Mexico and just find a way to get the drugs and supplements and nutrition they need. As I mentioned on the Solari report earlier, or in March, the best coverage I thought of Malaysia 370 was on Reddit. You just had citizens all over the world sort of doing a much newer, updated version of what we did with unanswered questions on 9/11, which is just get online and start trying to ascertain what facts we knew, what they mean. Remarkable, some of the most responsible coverage on any of these sort of mysteries. So great example. And of course, the one I love is Kickstarter comes up with past the $1 billion mark. And so perfect example of where the market wants to have micro equity financing, wants to have stock markets for small business, wants to have stock markets for communities, but it can't do it. And so at some point we just say, okay, you know, we can't have equity markets, no problem. We'll just give each other $1 billion. So amazing, amazing workaround. We saw the Obamacare deadline come and go very, very recently. And what we're seeing is a lot of people just walk away and say, you know something, I'm not paying for the service because I don't trust the system anymore. I'm going to pay the fee. I'm going to find a workaround. I put up in the first quarter a wonderful documentary. I gave it a big gold Solari star called Second Opinion. You had a very, very credible team out what Mount Sinai had done years ago in terms of suppressing evidence on the beneficial benefits of Laetril when it came to treatment of cancer. It's an astonishing production, and the fact that it came out in the way it did is a perfect example of the kind of critical mass that's building and saying, you know, we're going to break through. We're just going to walk away. We're just going to do it. It's tax time, and tax time is a time where if you haven't gotten fed up, you're very likely to do it. The double standard gets very painful because you're looking at what you're paying and you're looking at what large corporations are not paying, and what you're realizing, you're paying money into a system that in fact is using that money to do things that are harmful to you. So it's kind of like you're paying the sheriff of Nottingham, you're funding his budget to torture you. And it's a time of real accountability. There's a tremendous amount of frustration in the United States that I've noticed. And in any place around the country where people right now are in the taxes, I see great frustration. Part of it is that a variety of different investors are taking gains. And that means, you know, if you needed to downsize your precious metals, many of those investors have taken big gains. And if you had money in the equity, in the North American equity markets, and you feel it's high and you're taking gains, you're noticing it's a very expensive cut, especially when a lot of that gain represents deflation. So I'm sorry, inflation. And so, you know, so tax time is a very painful time. And what I would say is, given what's been going on over the last year and tax time and the frustration with unemployment, with the fallen household incomes, that the 2014 elections coming up were going to be very meaningful. And by meaningful, I mean voters are going to come out, they're going to care, and they're going to vote in such number that even the voting machines can't rig it. We've reached a point where I think many people are beginning to realize incompetence and corruption are cover stories, and they're cover stories for a system that doesn't, it never corrects, because in fact those are just cover stories. The problem is not incompetence or corruption. The problem is that we're engineering the system in a way which is outside the laws we believe it to be, and as written on the books, and it's a plan. Well, April Fool's Day, or plus one from the Supreme Court. The 2014 elections have just been negated. The Supreme Court has now essentially removed any barriers to or any restrictions on how much can be given to a candidate. And so now we're going to see billionaires be able to give one candidate $1 billion. What that tells me, it tells me a couple things. One is that the sort of the leadership was very concerned that even the voting machines wasn't going to do it this time, that the anger is this bad. Part of it being Harry Reid saying he's not going to support the president on the trade agreements, you know, because real fear of the electorate. The other is, there's no doubt about it, what Mr. Global wants more than anything is a constitutional convention. Don't go for it. Don't go along. It's a nightmare. It's the worst thing we could possibly get, because they will hijack the process. But you have activists for many years who've been pounding the drums and saying they need it because of election financing reform. And so this is just going to make it stronger. And unfortunately, as bad as this is, it's not as bad as what they can do with a constitutional convention. So beware, beware, beware. I posted in our bullet points for this discussion a link to the first quarter Salieri report on FBAR development. So for the two, one of the parts of the filing on April 15th for U.S. individuals, there's a discussion of what you have to do if you own precious metals, as well as the FBAR form, which is due on June 30. So if you need to attend to those, I would recommend you take a look at that special report again. Okay, next part of the, or I should say last part of our discussion of reorganizing the global consumer is Business Just Do It. We talked about Consumer Just Do It. Let's talk about Business Just Do It, because when you have this integration, again, of media, entertainment, and financial transactions into one device, particularly a device that an individual is going to keep with them for many, many hours during the day, you're talking about all sorts of integration occurring and all sorts of industries now sort of competing for each other's businesses. And so we're watching, we're literally watching lines between different business sectors melt away and business models change in radical ways. One of the big ones is cutting out the finance guys. So we have hospitals saying, you know, we can't afford the insurance companies. We can't deliver decent care and give the insurance companies their spread. So we are going to start insurance companies, and we'll just insure the patients and take care of them too. So the hospital's backing into the insurance company's margins. Silicon Valley, of course, is trying to re-engineer everything into an app. But certainly they're trying to re-engineer the brokerage business and the banking business into apps. And there are all sorts of examples of what they're up to. We see T-Mobile offering banking services, again, trying to cut the banks out and offer something. So you see this telecommunications versus banks thing happening. More websites, peer-to-peer lending. When peer-to-peer lending started, that means an individual lending money to other individuals. There was a lot of pressure from the powers that be to kind of assert control of these things, but they're growing and they continue to grow, and it's going to be more and more difficult to stop them. We see the Chinese online stores doing more and more with peer-to-peer lending and sort of lending. We see PayPal financing purchases. So it's happening and it's going to grow. Virtual currency, can it cut out the credit card companies? There's tremendous opportunity in virtual currencies to lower the financial transactions costs and fees, and that's part of the interest in them, despite my skepticism and the risks that are attendant with that. Finally, we see Walmart and Apple suing credit card companies, saying, look, you're taking too much of the spread. Part of it is, if you look at someone like Walmart, their margins are getting squeezed terribly as the economy softens and household income goes down. So that 1-3% that the credit card companies might be taking is potentially the thing that could keep them alive. So cutting out the finance guys is something we're seeing, but there are all sorts of these examples of companies sort of going after each other's business. And for you as a consumer or a business person, some of these areas are going to offer opportunities for you. The Vatican, the mother of all reengineering. So I know you're thinking, oh, well, that's a religious organization. Vatican and the endowments in and behind and around it is a huge global business, particularly in those areas where people are not angry and still paying their 10% tithe. So we've talked a lot last year and throughout the first quarter about the Vatican, what's going on in the Vatican. It is the mother of all reengineerings. So it's worth keeping an eye on. And it's the largest global institution that's having to rebalance from a governance structure that's very much controlled in the developed world to one that's much more sensitive to the emerging markets. Finally, regulators take their pound of flesh as all of this squeezing of the margins and deflation of revenues goes on. Government's got the same problem. They've got an enormous number of agencies and regulators. And, you know, we saw in the 80s, particularly around the war of drugs, but it's now spread into many other areas, more and more of the enforcement agencies on a for-profit model where they make money from seizures, they make money from civil money penalties. So we have regulators out on the hunt, and they're taking their pound of flesh, and that's not unconnected to the fact that we have bankers getting hit by trains and jumping off buildings and, I would say, being thrown in front of trains and thrown off of buildings. So the regulators are out there taking the pound of flesh, and I would say for many of the big financial institutions, it is a difficult time, not to say that their stocks aren't still doing well and they still don't have advantages, which are, beyond sinful. Okay, well, that's it for reorganizing the consumer markets. I want to stress again that that this is going to be very, very important, because one of the ways that we all have a dramatic impact on what happens in this world is where we give our attention, whether it's media attention or political attention, and who and how we engage in transactions, whether they're purchases or financial transactions or donations. And when all of these cash flows gets re-engineered, it's literally within that space, there is an opportunity to reinvent our world and reinvent it in the ways that we wish. And there's going to be opportunities too. So I have to tell you that I think the reorganization of consumer markets is going to be as profoundly impactful as the reorganization of the labor markets. Even maybe more so, but it's something that's going to rock our world. It's rocking our world now. Please pay attention to it and look for ways to find opportunity for yourself and to protect you from some of the more unpleasant areas, particularly the compromising of our privacy. And as it is tax time, the other thing I have to say is please be impeccable. Remember the people who are listening to your phone calls and reading your bank accounts and watching all your transactions are also the people who are collecting your taxes. So don't assume that they don't know. I'm sure they do if they want to.